Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Kim Sherry sits down with a local sauna purveyor to discuss the culture and benefits of sauna, as well as the technological advancements that have been developed. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation about the UAA Opera Ensemble's upcoming production of Mozart's Magic Flute. The beloved opera will be getting a modern update, with the story taking place in a virtual reality video game. We'll hear from the director and two performers to find out more. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
People around the world have turned to heat and steam for healing, connection, and ritual, most famously in places like Finland, where sauna is a way of life. And long before modern wellness trends, indigenous communities here in Alaska practiced their own forms of steaming, using traditional sweat lodges as part of physical, spiritual, and communal well-being. Today we're seeing a powerful revival in sauna culture, blending ancient traditions with contemporary health and lifestyle trends. From wood-fired saunas to cold plunges in icy waters, the hot-cold ritual is gaining new attention across the state and beyond. In this conversation, we'll explore the deep history, cultural roots, and modern resurgence of sauna, and what it means to Alaskans today. Today we welcome Callie Bennett, second-generation owner of The Waterworks. Hi, Callie. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you into the world of sauna?
Absolutely. And thanks for the opportunity. Second generation of The Waterworks. We started the business, my folks did, down in Girdwood as a hot tub rental company in the late 70s. My dad was actually a hard hat diver and needed a place to test his dive equipment, called a friend of his from California who was making hot tubs. And suddenly one appeared in Girdwood, and they realized that this was going to become quite popular. Shortly behind that, of course, saunas started to take hold, and we have been offering both saunas and hot tubs since the late 70s throughout Alaska.
That's amazing. Really a family company business. That's
awesome.
When people think of sauna, they often think of Finland, the Nordic countries. Can you walk us through where sauna culture began?
Boy, I would say in the Pacific, in the Eastern Hemisphere, you name a hemisphere, there's been a sauna culture there and for many centuries. The Finnish certainly have become more popular in the awareness because it is integrated in their common day culture currently. Whereas you had mentioned in your opening that our indigenous cultures here in Alaska, many throughout the United States and across Russia, Japan, have used different forms of heat and steam together for centuries.
Been around for a really long time.
Yeah.
What role has sauna traditionally played in daily life, whether it be Nordic countries or even here in Alaska?
Yeah, I think that's a twofold question. Certainly the Nordic countries, as we experience longer winters, have really embraced sauna culture. Throughout, of course, outside of, I call it the road system, I think you see the saunas embedded into daily rituals simply because that is your bathing source. You're not necessarily jumping in for the cold water, but you're coming in to warm up and cleanse at the same time. When we look at the European cultures, we certainly can look at what the Romans had done in creating bathhouses all over Western Europe. And as you get further north, you definitely see more steam and sauna into those cultures. So as we look at like the Finnish and the Nordic cultures, we're really seeing I think right now they're calling out almost two saunas or three saunas per household in current day.
Wow.
Right? We're not quite there yet in Alaska, but it's certainly common.
So how does that work? How do you have two saunas per household?
I thought that was a really interesting number. I believe there's a couple different ways that they're doing that. One is probably more of an indoor custom style that's built in, and the other would be more of an outdoor experience. But I think it was kind of interesting number-wise to start looking at their population. And so you realize that culture is embracing it, and it's part of every day. It's not just a special event. Mm-hmm. It's not just an occasional. It's really part of what you do.
Hmm. Wow, that's incredible. Can you give us an idea of sauna culture in Alaska right now?
Sauna culture in Alaska has really come to life more recently in the mainstream, though it has always been around. Obviously, as we had the oil boom through the 70s and 80s, many homes that were built during that time have got some type of built-in sauna. And of course, if we're saying sauna correctly, it sounds a little funny, but it's sauna. A little Minnesotan, I should say. I have heritage there, so I can say it that way. But currently, we are seeing a revival of sauna culture in Alaska for a lot more outdoor versus built-in or indoor-style sauna. And of course, as I mentioned, you know, saunas can be used in many different ways. Traditionally and with indigenous, you really saw it more as a way to cleanse and obviously used in rituals, etc. When we get into, I'm going to call it the modern day culture, we are definitely seeing this uptick in wellness trending. We are still, as Alaskans, wanting to be outside, but we're also wanting to be warm. But we want to enjoy some northern lights, so we want to see those too. And we might want to jump in the cold lake or the snow, etc. So pretty dynamic.
How has Alaska shaped its own unique sauna culture? Is it just the fact that we like the outdoor ones better, or are we doing something a little different up here?
That's a great question. I would say our location and placement of sauna really has treated it kind of to its own. It's not necessarily as rustic, but it is wild. Where I think down in the States, sauna, especially in larger towns and cities, sauna is still part of the culture and becoming more steadfast. And that's a lot more communal, or you'll go to kind of the concept of a bathhouse. Where in Alaska, it's almost a destination, right? We have placed saunas in some of the most remote locations that you can dream up. And it's pretty unique, I think, from that application. Alaska allows you to kind of escape into the wilderness, and now you can have a sauna too.
Yeah, my husband has built saunas in both of the backyards we've owned.
Lovely.
And he's got a friend who has some property on Miller's Landing. And so they go in the sauna there, and then they run out to Resurrection Bay, and they jump in the water and...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's every kind of sauna out there in every kind of place.
Absolutely. And I think Alaska provides the setting, and you just get to show up and enjoy a sauna.
Absolutely. And you also get like a view usually.
Oh, right. Especially that one. That's a gorgeous spot.
Are there regional differences in how people use saunas across Alaska?
Yes and no. I think even here within the Anchorage Bowl, people are embracing outdoor sauna more so. I think we're going to kind of talk about the different types of sauna. I would say that the further out you go, the more remote you're going to see wood-fired versus electric-based. So that probably sets you up for the major differences. When it comes down to that experience, those are still what we consider traditional-style sauna, where you are often creating steam with hot rocks over either the fire or over a heating element. In cities proper, some people are finding that they actually prefer a dry heat sauna. Mm-hmm. And of course, you've got to kind of be on grid or very patient with your generator. Mm-hmm. So that would probably be the biggest difference, I would think, to what we're seeing as far as kind of the trend of current day sauna.
Mm-hmm. What makes sauna such a natural fit for the Alaskan lifestyle and climate?
Well, I think you just described it. Everybody wants a little bit of an adventure, mm-hmm. jumping in the ocean, jumping in Resurrection Bay, and having a place to come warm up really makes it easy to enjoy it. There's, like I mentioned, we have put saunas in all sorts of wild locations. up on a glacier, yeah, it kind of reminds me of almost like a Dr. Seuss, where it's like, I'll have a sauna on a train, maybe in a boat, maybe with Sam I Am, you know? So, yeah.
Awesome. I want to visit that sauna on the glacier.
Right?
Have you guys put saunas in any other interesting locations that are kind of notable?
Sure. One of my favorite actually was a custom sauna that I worked with some clients out East End Road in Homer. And it has about a 9.5-foot window in it that looks down Ketchumak Bay.
Wow.
Right. So it's the view from the sauna. It's that experience. Certainly, we've got a couple down in the Seward area as well. Personally, I really like it when you can enjoy the outdoors and still be inside.
Mm-hmm.
So many of our saunas, of course, Big Lake, we've got some that have got glass or some type of more window to allow natural light in, but also allow you to feel like you're part of the outdoors at the same time.
So I'm sure we'll get into the technicalities later, but that does make me curious about how effective a sauna is if there's a lot of glass. Because typically they're, you know, surrounded by cedar and you want to keep that heat in. So how does it work with a lot of window?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting because you are often in that case focused on a heater that is a little oversized to keep up with that, and glass that is specifically rated for that high heat and that higher temperature. You're losing some insulation value, but the benefits and the offset there are pretty minimal for the time that you're actually in the sauna.
Right.
I'm sure you've experienced some of the Nordic spa applications where you have an opportunity in one of the larger saunas that I'm aware of in the state, and you're literally looking at the forest in Girdwood.
Mm-hmm.
And so really the sauna heaters themselves become a little bit oversized to make up the difference there.
I see. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. And I think, yeah, you're right, it's worth it to get those views.
Right.
So sauna does seem to be having a resurgence, and you've noticed that too. What do you think is driving this renewed interest?
That's a great question. We have seen and serviced saunas for over 50 years. What we're finding right now is that there's, of course, mainstream media coming into effect. But I think locally we've had an opportunity with experiences. It's like everybody's tried a hot tub in Alaska. We don't really have to educate you about that. And that's becoming a, hey, I had a sweat at my friend's house and tried their sauna, and now I want one. And I realized, you know, I'm speaking for this person, but I realized that that is going to be part of my wellness plan. So the other half of this is accessibility has been a big thing. And really getting that conversation about wellness, people are being way, way more aware of how we want to feel, especially during the darker months up here. What are ways that can help us balance a lot of our challenges as we're, you know, navigating wellness and biohacking and all of those things. And so, you know, as a broader picture, the outdoor saunas really have become probably the biggest trending sauna experience. And I think as we kind of talked, you know, we have different types of sauna. So that really becomes your traditional type.
Mm-hmm.
And where you see that most is, like we talked about, you know, unique experiences or people wanting to create their own individual Nordic spa at home type setting. But what I find really interesting is we also offer a combo sauna where you can have a dry heat and or traditional in the same space. And so now we're able to kind of break down the barriers of you could only have one or the other. And that seems to really be speaking to a lot of people who are wanting some of the benefits of this dry heat, this infrared heat. But they can also turn around and still have that steam as well.
So. And this is in one unit, and it's just a matter of the technology is changing?
Yeah, the technology has really come forward probably over the last 10 to 15 years to be able to offer that.
Have you seen a shift from the private sauna to more of a social or community-oriented experience here in Anchorage, or is it...
I think we're a little behind the ball here in Anchorage,
but it's coming. I can't think of any like community saunas in the area, but I'm not an expert.
Yes, they are out there. We know the Alaska Club had just opened one here in the Anchorage area. I believe they're also doing one for their Wasilla facility. Obviously, Alyeska Resort really brought that to life for everybody. And what I love about that is you get both that community, but you also have that opportunity to experience a little bit smaller in their forest walk space. I would love to see what's going to happen in the next 5 years from a community standpoint, because I really think that there's demand. We're seeing it out of state. Pretty much any large city you go into, you can find a sauna and cold plunge opportunity for a day pass. And it's not necessarily going to a spa for the day. It's specifically a space focused on that community opportunity for, you know, having a wonderful sweat and being able to then cold plunge and kind of having that opportunity for contrast therapy. So
do you see benefits to a communal sauna as opposed to just like a singular in your backyard kind of sauna? What benefits would there be?
Yeah, you know, it's really dynamic. On the community side of things, communal bathing And in traditional Finnish sauna, it is much more communal, right? So whether it's your household and your neighbors, and it becomes part of this opportunity for celebration, but also an opportunity to come together and connect without a digital screen in between you. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a huge opportunity for that. And a lot of people are craving and wanting that. And we're seeing this, like I say, Alaska's a little behind. Mm-hmm. We're seeing this trend. I was just down in San Diego and seeing this trend very heavy in areas that are wellness focused. And I have a good friend that's in the Portland area, and she says that there's three different places she loves to go to that are, you know, community style bathing, in that you're going to go sit and hang out and converse in the sauna and then cold plunge, and that becomes a whole experience. So excited to see where Alaska can take it. On the trending side, I think a lot of Alaskans were so funny. We love to come together, but we also love to have our own space mm-hmm. and feel sequestered intentionally. Mm-hmm. And so though a lot of our saunas that go to, we'll say, like Big Lake area, those are a lot more in the communal. They're intended to be larger. You're having a lot of people mm-hmm. in and out. You're having groups come over and engaging and creating that wonderful experience, where I think some of those that are more in the city limits are a little bit more personal mm-hmm. in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen social media influencing sauna culture at all?
Joe Rogan, anyone? Everybody knows that name, right? Yeah, absolutely. It's been really wild. Just, you know, I think coming out of the experiences everyone had during COVID, looking for health and wellness really kind of has skyrocketed. And where we've seen a trend in this sauna culture, certainly influenced or heavily impacted by the experience that some of the influencers have had. Mm. I know that Mr. Rogan has a tendency to talk about both his infrared and his traditional experiences. And that's been really cool because it also helps educate people. So a lot of times when we're working with clients who maybe haven't had both experiences, we have an opportunity. We don't have to educate them, but we have an opportunity to support what they're already mm-hmm. educated and speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on this topic, what is the difference between infrared and what is it?
Yeah. So it's far infrared mm-hmm. And traditional.
Okay.
So traditional heat, we'll start with good old Finland, mm-hmm. Normally would be a wood stoked fire and sauna rocks on top, and you would be adding the lo-li. Hopefully I'm saying that right today, which is the steam on top of the rocks to create really the essence of heat and bring that heat to life. Mm-hmm. And so that traditional experience can be recreated with electric versus fire, mm-hmm. but both we still consider traditional. As you move over into the far infrared, we are looking at what they normally refer to as a carbon flux emitter that creates the heat wave you experience. So big picture here, it's a black material and it creates a heat wave. And on the light scale, it would be labeled as a far infrared light wave. It's invisible to the naked eye, but it's penetrating our body and creating a wonderful dry heat experience. Oftentimes when I'm working with somebody who doesn't really have knowledge or experience in either, we'll see traditional because of its opportunity for humidity and that kind of high steam heat often relates to more respiratory detox. Mm-hmm. You're still having a higher heat at that point as well, where far infrared is going to be a little bit lower temperature-wise and used a longer period of time.
So the far infrared heat, can you not get it from a traditional wood stove? It takes a special device?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, the emitters that are creating the far infrared heat wave are really designed to generate that very specific heat wave. So no, you're not getting far infrared light waves coming off of a wood stove.
Okay. So your wood stove is just the traditional kind of steam.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess, can you break down the other types of sauna experiences? We've got the traditional wood fire and the far infrared, and what else is there that people can look into?
Yeah, absolutely. So full spectrum is another version of that far infrared, where they're actually expanding out the light waves that are occurring. We've got red light therapy that has been coming in kind of this last year and a half, becoming more popular, where mm-hmm. people want that infrared, but they also want the red light therapy. And that's kind of combining to create a full spectrum experience. that's going to be, I call it, especially for us Alaskans, you know, many of us disappear for a couple months and head down to Arizona. The experience you'll have in a far infrared sauna is going to be much more like stepping into dry, higher heat as though you're in Phoenix, right? We'll call it midsummer. Your temperature range in there is normally about 125 to 135, where traditional you're going to be at about 165 on the low end, 185 on that mid range. And certainly as we're talking, some of our more rugged applications will crank that up, wood fired closer to that 200 range. Mm-hmm. That is a hot, hot sauna. Mm-hmm. I top out at about 190. Mm-hmm. That's about where I'm comfortable.
And right.
It's a short lived session normally.
It sounds like there's like a lot of different options these days for
yeah.
people to choose from. I mean, actually, I know that there's like electric and I know that there's wood fire, but I had no idea you could incorporate all of these other health benefits into the sauna.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's just, I think, kind of the point when we start talking about the far infrared, that detox is more about that muscle and tissue and joint detox. So some of our older clients who maybe aren't really comfortable with super high heat, they don't want to spend the hours cutting wood anymore. We've been there, done that. Mm-hmm. You can now remote control through your app and turn on your sauna, and your sauna will be hot and ready to go when you get home. But that dry heat, that Arizona experience, really helps detox a lot of the built-up toxins that can be found in muscle and joint. And arthritic clients really find relief when they are able to relax a little bit that way.
And how do you run a lot of these different machines? Is electric, propane? I mean, what are the ways we can keep them going?
Yeah, great question. Not propane, unless you're firing up the generator that way. Mm-hmm. But normally in the far infrared and the full spectrum saunas, you're going to be an electric setup. Mm-hmm. They're so dynamic now. You can even have like full music systems in them, which is kind of interesting. Some people really love that. I'm not sold on that one yet. But the intent is, for the most part, your wood fired or electric, and then under the electric umbrella, you have options to either go traditional heat, the combo, which allows you traditional and infrared, or just that far infrared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like a lot of options for people these days.
They certainly are.
From the wood stove original.
Right.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm host Kim Sherry, speaking with Callie Bennett, second generation owner of The Waterworks, talking steam, sweat, and serenity. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host Kim Sherry, and now we're back to talking steam, sweat, and serenity. Callie, what is a true sauna experience in your opinion?
That's a great question. Personally, I've had both styles of saunas. I still own both styles of saunas. However, I find that I am definitely joining the outdoor enthusiasts. I love being able to step outside and then enter this amazing, warm, steamy heat. Back to our conversation about kind of having that visual as well. Being able to feel like I'm outside. I have glass on the front of my sauna so I can see when it's snowing, or I can experience, I call it the Alaskan weather station. You know, you can see the weather changing outside, but you're still in this wonderful warm environment. I really enjoy steaming. I find that I'm probably about a 30 to 40 minute total time in my sauna with a little break in between, whether I'm jumping in the snow or jumping back in my hot tub. But a true sauna experience for me is being able to find a place that I'm not distracted with a digital device. So that's number one, feeling present. And I really, truly love the steam application. So
it does feel good.
Yeah.
It feels like your pores are just like cleaning themselves.
Absolutely.
I love it.
And your muscles. I think that's a big one too. I find I love my hot tub and the massage I get in my hot tub, but it's almost not quite deep enough. And as soon as you get that high heat, you just kind of melt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How important is the steam to the sauna experience?
Personal preference. You're still getting high heat in traditional, and you can still enjoy that high heat experience without having to steam.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes steam, again, personal preference. Some people like a really steamy sauna, but you're not normally to a steam room style in that. So, and I still have clients who prefer just that high heat with no steam in traditional, and other clients who are not interested in that at all, and they just want to have the benefits of the far infrared.
This is a good time to actually talk about the difference between a steam room and a sauna.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've been in different gyms where they have both.
Sure.
And I don't really like the steam room. To me, it just doesn't feel, I don't know, the word, I don't feel super clean in it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Does it?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially for us in Alaska, where we have no humidity to begin with. You know, we're at least here in the Anchorage area. Juneau, I'm sorry, I can't speak to humidity down there. It's a different level. But I think that we go into a sauna with an intention and kind of expectation that we're going to be able to steam as we prefer.
Right.
Many clubs, club experiences, and I'm just thinking of athletic clubs, don't allow you to steam. So it's just a higher heat and it's still a dry sauna. In a steam room, they have an automatic style steamer that creates from a steam generator the steam that you experience. More often than not, the point that you get in that sauna, that steam room, it's probably been on for a number of hours. I don't really like or appreciate the getting dripped on situation.
Yeah. It's just very wet.
Condenses. Yeah. It is a very wet environment. Again, like, I'd rather go walk in the rainforest. Right. And or go somewhere where it's truly humid and I can be outside and enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But some people really do like that steam. Especially on the personal preference, I am seeing that people are starting to put steam showers and steam rooms back into their home alongside a sauna, just to have that ability to have a preference, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least they have their own choice that way.
Yeah.
For someone new to sauna?
Sauna.
Sauna. Okay. Where does this word originate from before we move on?
Let me backtrack. My heritage brought us over from Finland and Norway area, and my grandparents and great-grandparents had settled in Minnesota, and sauna is truly how it's supposed to be pronounced. And then, you know, the further west we go, the more we change up how that pronunciation occurs. So you'll still hear us say sauna because we're kind of fast, but everyone that's in the industry knows that it's sauna. And okay. I believe that a lot of those roots were from the immigrants that had brought sauna over from Finland and Norway. Way into, you know, we hear that through like Wisconsin and Minnesota and those areas.
Sauna. Mm-hmm. Okay. For someone new to sauna, how should they approach their first session?
That's a great question. Bring some water. We're going to want to hydrate.
Oh, yeah.
I find that, of course, I like to sit on a towel just because you're going to start sweating and expect that. Come and sit on that lower bench initially to kind of start acclimatizing your body to the heat that you're going to feel before you just jump to the upper bench. Again, traditional, right? I think big takeaway is that a lot of people expect to be in there for a long period of time. In fact, the benefits, true health benefits, are kind of short bursts, especially of high heat. So you're in for maybe 10 to 15 minutes, 20 minutes kind of tops, especially if you're sitting on that higher level. Listen to your body. That's going to be a big one. Some people will find that if they're not hydrated, they can get dizzy. Mm-hmm. Just be very conscious and aware and plan to take a break, whether that's cooling down outside the sauna for a few minutes. Some very courageous people might go for a cold plunge there. Commend you on that. Growing up in Alaska, I'm not one that loves cold water, so kind of stay away from those. And then venture back in because it really is kind of that little bit of contrast, being able to cool your body back down and come back to that heat again. You're activating your circulation on a totally different level than just running in the gym or so on and so forth. What's dynamic about that, too, is that you are stimulating your cardiovascular system. You're bringing your circulation up, but you're not having to apply a lot of muscular movement in order to do so. So just be prepared to relax a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What are the physical health benefits of regular sauna use, and how often do you have to sauna for those benefits?
Yeah, that's a great question. The reality that we're seeing, and again, I think the country of Finland really has proven most of what we're seeing research-wise, that true use about 3 to 4 times a week gives you the biggest benefit from a cardiovascular health application. Obviously, it's a low impact sport, right? We're sitting, we're relaxing, we're sweating. But at the same time, we are stimulating our bodies and stimulating the circulation. We're detoxifying our body by that circulation, sweating out toxins as well. So when it comes to it, we're really seeing a trend, and you can still have all of those benefits from a lower heat, longer far infrared session. It doesn't just have to be that high traditional steam experience for both of those to be valuable. The other application, of course, is bringing us to the contrast therapy that I kind of mentioned. I'm a little shy about, again, cold water, maybe. if you can experience that hot, cold, that's really going to truly stimulate your parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous systems and help bring them back into balance.
Beyond physical health, what are the emotional or mental benefits that people can get from this?
Yeah, imagine turning your phone off for 30 minutes. Let's just start there. You don't even have to have a sauna. I think that's one thing, is to disconnect, but also to have the opportunity to connect. So emotionally, mentally, we're reducing cortisol. We're helping balance out our hormones. We're bringing that stress level down just a little bit, even for a little bit of time. You're going to have that lasting effect. The true long-term benefits of sauna use is when it's consistent. And more often than not, what we hear, and I love this, is that our clients will come back in and they're like, you know, I thought a sauna was a great idea, and now it was an amazing idea just because it's changed how I feel and the benefits are longer, right? Like, you're having kind of that runner's high, but you're having that sauna high as your body is moving, changing, but also calming itself.
So 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Kind of an in and out, kind of go in, get hot, cool down, go back in. Kind of situation, and if you're really brave, a cold plunge in there.
Yeah.
For true benefits.
For true benefits, yeah.
Okay. You'll get benefits otherwise, but maybe not the ultimate benefits.
The ultimate benefits, absolutely. Cold plunging on its own is dynamic. We have free cold water all over the state. Whether you just take a cold shower after, that's going to help, you know, drain off whatever you've sweated out as well. But that's really going to help kind of re-energize and reset your circulation. Yeah.
Is there any science behind the growing claims about sauna and longevity?
Yes. I'm not a doctor. So again, we'll start there. I'm not a doctor. However, what I'm seeing and what I've experienced and the clients that have come in, you know, through our doorway and have spoken to us about their sauna use, where they were achy and their joints were sticking and they were having a hard time with mobility, they're seeing that, you know, even a couple months in, they really were able to start moving and stretching and areas that they hadn't really been able to feel comfortable or confident in their body, they were able to start having, the neuropathy was disappearing. So I think the answer is yes. Just from personal experience, that's a yes, yes, yes. When, you know, we go to look at reports and things like that, again, Finland has really kind of led the march on what it looks like from a research standpoint. And that really comes back to that cardiovascular health more than anything.
So we were just talking about the kind of heat then cold situation. Is that a modern thing, or has that always been around? Like, did the Finns start that too?
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to probably venture to say that it has been around for a very long time. Contrast therapy, as both a way to stimulate your body and create and re-energize your body, has been around for a very long time. The Northern Hemisphere, obviously our indigenous people had access to much colder climates, and I have no doubt that there is plenty a day where it would jump from one of the sweat lodges and then jump into the sauna or the cold lake, et cetera. Where we're seeing it, I think in modern day, really in the last 5 years, it's been slowly gaining traction, and now it's becoming mainstream. And mainstream for someone to have that experience in their home, where there's home cold plunges that people are regularly using. And that, I think, is something that we haven't really seen before, mm-hmm. where it wasn't as accessible. People in, certainly in Arizona, again, I'll talk about Arizona, mm-hmm. And warmer climates are finding that cold plunging is really helping them reset their system too.
Mm-hmm. So what is happening to our bodies when you go from heat to cold and back and forth?
That's a great question. So obviously, as we get into either a hot tub or a sauna, your body and your veins and your circulation system is starting to expand, right? We're stimulating it, we're expanding it. And then as you introduce your body back into cold, whether that's cold shower, snowbank, etc., you are now restricting that, right? And we're bringing everything back in together. And so when we mentioned the ability to do both, right, we go from hot to cold and hot to cold in this contrast therapy, we are actively creating internal constriction and expansion right behind each other. And as that occurs, we're stimulating our body to react, but also the aftermath of that is this, again, back to kind of this runner's high where you just feel elevated, you feel renewed, you feel rejuvenated. And the true benefits are that you've been basically putting your body from a high heat situation, which is one version of shock, to mm-hmm. a cold water or a cold application, another version of shock, back and forth, with the end result being that we feel more awake, mm-hmm. more alert, we feel better in our bodies. You know, all of your nerves are now stimulated. Mm-hmm. When you combine that with what is really kind of not being spoken about, but starting to come around with these sauna and cold plunge communal experiences, is breath work. Mm-hmm. And now you can really start opening up and oxygenating your body. It changes a lot very rapidly.
Have you seen any uniquely Alaskan takes on the sauna to cold plunge?
Oh, boy. Well, we'll start with Special Olympics and their giant cold plunge,
yes.
aka polar plunge. That's a great one. I hope to bring out some saunas for them next year, too, because I think that would be really
fun.
They
would love that.
Yeah, I think that could be so fun.
Oh, my gosh.
There's plenty of applications. Alaskans are so creative, mm-hmm. and we're also such DIYers mm-hmm. that initially people were asking if we were carrying cold plunges, and it was like, yes, of course. However, we have access to cold water, and we have pretty much unlimited access to cold water for the most part. It makes it really easy to come up with creative ways to, I call it the Rubbermaid bathtub situation, or especially if, you know, you're off-grid a little bit more, what that looks like. We've got some cool cedar-style cold plunges, which have become kind of popular and reminds me of the original hot tubs mm-hmm. that we used to sell back in the day. So, yeah, there's all sorts of different ways to do it.
Yep, you can get really creative.
Yeah.
What should someone consider before investing in a sauna?
I think their use. I think that's the big thing. My recommendation is don't put it out. Let's say you've got this beautiful lot and you're like, oh, the sauna in the woods at the back of the lot that I have to shovel to get there. Mm-hmm. Are you actually going to shovel?
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about if you want to actually use this and put it into your routine and your daily life, does it make more sense to have it closer in a place that you can easily access it? And that includes, you know, putting it in the master bedroom bathroom or places where you know it's going to get used versus, let's say, the basement that nobody goes into.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to go down to that basement even though there's a sauna down there. Mm-hmm. So putting it in a space that you know that you are actively going to be able to get out and use it is the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
From there, everything else is very doable.
Are there any common etiquette rules or traditions that people might not know about in regards to sauna?
That's a great question, especially in a public application.
Yes.
Keep your clothes on.
I mean, but is that true? Do you have to keep your clothes on?
Yeah, please.
I don't know.
I mean, swimwear. Swimwear is appropriate. And interestingly enough, as we were kind of mentioning this mainstream, I get a fair amount through social media of, you know, advertising in regards to the sauna market industry, and there is now sauna bathing clothing that is all organic, and those things I think are great. I personally like and recommend for all of our clients to have something to sit on. Traditionally, I think people kind of didn't pay attention to and just came and sat on the benches, and you end up staining your benches. A lot of people don't want to come back and try and sand down benches and whatnot. So being aware of that and also hydrating. I think a lot of people kind of forget. Mm-hmm. I know I've had an experience in a public application where somebody kind of forgot to hydrate and maybe had gone to really high heat to really cold and felt that dizzy experience. Mm-hmm. It was a little scary, you know?
So. Well, it can especially be dangerous if you're talking a wood stove in a sauna because there's the potential to fall into that wood stove. And if you're out there saunaing by yourself, I mean, you've got to really be careful sometimes.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keeping, listening to your body, I think that's a huge one. As far as culturally goes, I think the best thing there is just I normally come out. I have a robe because, again, I'm walking outside to my sauna. I have a robe that I hang up, but I also have a towel to sit on. Mm-hmm. And we've got these really lovely thin Turkish towels versus a super thick terry cloth. And I love the way that the Turkish towels feel. They almost feel kind of like a really, I don't even know, like a Turkish sheet or something. Mm-hmm. You know, they're thin, they're not grippy. And the more I sweat, they absorb really nicely. So, keeping that in mind and some water and keep jewelry, take jewelry off, things that are going to get hot to touch. Mm-hmm. Metals are a big thing. Leave your cell phone, tucked away, plugged in somewhere else. Bring a book.
What's something about sauna culture that most people misunderstand?
I think that they expect benefits immediately. Mm. You're going to feel great, and the more you use it, the better you're going to feel. But it's not just a magic wonder. You know, it definitely takes some practice, and your body will respond a little more dynamically with the more use you have.
Mm-hmm. That was super informative. Callie, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm host Kim Sherry. After this break, we'll be back with State of Art.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. We'll hear about the UAA Opera Ensemble's upcoming production of Mozart's Magic Flute. The beloved opera will be receiving a makeover for modern audiences. It'll feature the classic music in English, but this time the story will take place in a virtual reality video game. The performances will be in the UAA Recital Hall on Saturday and Sunday, April 18th and 19th at 4 and 7:30 p.m. We're joined by director Mari Hahn and performers Griffin Lindsay and Marilyn Camry. Hahn says that the Magic Flute has always been a story intended to entertain the masses.
So opera was basically a genre that was born out of entertainment for nobility and aristocracy. So Mozart was one of the first composers that paired up with the National Theater, and they decided to write an opera that would appeal to the mass population. And so the audience that came were families, children, and they would be eating and drinking while they were watching. And the story, although it has roots in Freemasonry, is a really fantastical kind of exploration of good and evil through characters that are not your usual characters. There's bits of supernatural in it. They're half man, half bird, which Griffin portrays. And so it's very easy for people to be entertained, you know, by this kind of story. And so it has really stood the test of time. It's one of the most popular operas, and I decided to have our own spin on it this time around.
Let's talk about this interpretation of Magic Flute. You're taking a somewhat drastic direction that people might not be used to. Could you kind of explain the concept of this specific version of Magic Flute?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted this production to appeal to a different demographic than usually will come to the UAA Recital Hall to see a concert. So they would be mostly, you know, adults, people who go to the symphony. You know, I don't mean to be in any way derogatory, but silver-haired people. You know,
I'm fur coats.
Yes, fur coats. You know, people who would have subscriptions to the opera, let's say. I want this to appeal to young adults, high school, middle school, college age kids, perhaps who have never been to an opera just because of that barrier of elitism. And so this story, the main character is playing a video game, and the characters come on one by one, and he's making them do various things. But then very soon after the overture, he gets trapped in his own video game. So somehow he falls into this story, and the story is the magic flute. So then he starts to meet all of these characters. And the thread that goes through this whole story is each character is really having to look inside him or herself to see what is good, what is not good, what kind of path do they want to take, what side would they want to align with. And it is pretty clear in the beginning, established by description, which characters are evil, which characters are good. But as this one character and his sidekick, the half-man, half-bird, go along on their journey, they start to question, is that really true, what we've been told?
Marilyn, did you have any sort of connection to the magic flute before getting involved?
Yes, partially. So at UAA, there's two parts. There's the first semester is music theater. The second semester is classical. And you're supposed to have a jury where you perform three or four songs. And so for the classical side, I performed Achic Fuse, and Mari had assigned it to me. And I struggled a little bit at first because I hadn't really felt like I was good enough for this role, for this song in particular, because it's difficult. It's really difficult. It's exposed. But Mari really believed in me, and she wanted me for the role. And so going into it, you know, I think I was afraid, and I didn't know if I was going to do very well. But then when we started working on the character, I started delving into the story of Pamina and the story of who she is and what her journey is. I really felt very moved by it. And now I'm like kind of in love with this story, and I'm especially in love with Pamina, for sure.
Did you find that maybe after you explored the character more, you were able to maybe emote the specific music closer to what you maybe want to or intend to, type of a thing?
Yes, 100%. And that goes for, you know, every performance I've done. If I'm connected to the character and I'm feeling what that character is feeling, then it becomes much easier to do the performance itself.
Griffin, I'm assuming you're probably pretty familiar with magic flute with your background and stuff. Have you ever performed or sung any of this stuff prior to this production?
I've actually done this production. I did it this last summer.
Okay.
I did a program called Prague Summer Nights, which is like a opera youth program where you go and you study the music beforehand, and then you go and you're there in Europe for a month studying with professionals. So it was a really great experience. I spent a month of my summer in Prague and Vienna, kind of hanging out and learning this music. I was not Papageno, although I did learn it. I was a role called The Speaker, who's one of Zarastro's, like his first-hand man. But I also understudied as Papageno. So I learned all of Papageno's stuff, and I learned it all in German. So then Mari told me that we'd be doing it in English. So I was, okay, I will relearn all of this in English, and I'll actually get to perform as Papageno. So having that experience has been really helpful in relearning the music and really getting into Papageno's role a little bit deeper.
And so is the music that we're going to hear, despite the story maybe taking place in a little bit more modern time frame, upgraded technology, is all the music going to be pretty true to the original
scores?
Yes,
100%. It's all Mozart. Yes, nothing is changed musically. I wrote the libretto myself in English to tell the story in a different way, but the music is absolutely Mozart. And if I could just say, you know, part of the reason why I chose this opera was because I have this incredible cohort of students who are just really talented. And we have Marilyn playing Pamina. She is the princess. Papageno, half-man, half-bird. Griffin is playing that. And then there's also a character called the Queen of Night, and she sings that iconic aria with the high Fs that is very, very popular and really requires somebody with that kind of voice to be able to do that role. And we happen to have two in the program. And then there's also a character named Zarastro who sings low F. So we have a 4-octave range between these two characters, you know, just between the two of them. So it requires people who can really step up and do these roles. And it's rare to have that in an undergraduate program. So I happen to have that cohort, and I thought I better jump on this and do it this year.
Do we want to touch on the musicians a little bit? I feel like we saw some familiar faces going to be helping you folks out with this production.
Yes. Well, the music director is Richard Gordon, and he comes up to Alaska frequently to work with the opera, Anchorage Opera. He's also very gifted in working with young singers. So very early on, when I first came here, 2002, pretty much right away, I was working with the Anchorage Opera with him. So he has worked with the students really frequently as a vocal coach and music director. So he will be our music director. And I've put together an instrumental ensemble rather than just being accompanied by piano, which usually happens with my opera ensemble because of lack of funds. But I raised the funds and I have put together a clarinet, flute, and bassoon trio, and they will be playing with Richard Gordon on keyboard. So it's a very, very special opportunity for the students to work closely with a chamber ensemble of just top-notch musicians, Laura Koenig from Anchorage Symphony and also the head of the Anchorage Festival of Music, Kirby Kaufman, who is the bassoonist on the symphony, and Christopher Song, pretty recent to Anchorage, as one of our faculty members. So he'll be playing clarinet.
Marilyn and Griffin, I guess, what are you two looking forward to most about getting on stage and presenting this production?
I think the thing I'm looking forward to the most is challenging myself. This is the biggest role I've ever done. Mm. Actually, Candide, 2 years ago, was the first production I'd ever done in my life. I've never done music, anything like stage-wise up until that point. And now doing a main role like Pamina, I would say one of the most important characters in this play, it's really exciting and, you know, a little bit terrifying.
Understandable.
But when I, you know, decided to do the role, I told myself that this is going to be challenging, but it's important for me as an artist to do it.
Awesome. How about you, Griffin? What excites you the most about this? I know you've done previously, but what about this specific one?
Well, Papageno is a little less vocally demanding of a role. It has a lot of material to learn. So really testing my mind, seeing how much information I can fit in there is one thing. But I'm honestly just really happy. I mean, Papageno is the comedic relief for the majority of the opera. So I'm just happy to get out there and make people laugh, honestly. And Papageno is like a top tier role to practice being a performer.
Yeah. How are we feeling about the kind of upgraded setting scenario? I'm sure you were all familiar with the original version, but jumping into this kind of unique production, what are we thinking about it?
Makes it a little bit more connectable. Mari's been really open to us, kind of, if we think of something that's really humorous, we can talk to Mari, we can add it into the dialogue, really kind of making this performance kind of relatable in a way to the audience we're trying to get out of it. That makes it really fun. And of course, we're like all buddies of the music program, so we're all cracking jokes and thinking of funny things, which is just so much fun.
So rehearsals and stuff have not been just a miserable time, I'm sure, then.
No, I've had to bite my tongue a little bit and make sure I'm not being too loud. Or
yeah, I guess, what do you think about this kind of different approach to, I mean, this will be your first time actually doing it, so you kind of get to do this cool new version, but your first stepping into Magic Flute is the modern video game version.
I really appreciate the balance between the humor and the seriousness of the show. I think that Pamina is one of the more serious characters just because of what she goes through. You know, her mom's evil. Her love interest is fighting against her mom. And so she's, you know, really torn between these two parts, aspects of her life. But I really do appreciate what Mari has brought with the video game aspect. I think it's really funny. I think one of the lines is literally, go touch grass. So that's pretty great.
The line is, why don't you go touch grass, Granny? in context, it'll make more sense.
Yes.
Anything else that you'd want to share with the audience about, you know, getting ready for the show, what to expect? Yeah, anything like that?
Yeah, so one of the features is kind of a multimedia presentation. So there is a huge screen that will be above the heads of the audience. And there are two very gifted in the cast artists, Marilyn being one of them and Hannah Clem being the other. And so they are drawing, illustrating the sets and portraits of some of the characters that we will feature during the video game aspect of it. And so the audience will be looking up, and instead of reading the surtitles, which is usually what a screen is for, like with Anchorage Opera, they will be seeing just the locations of where each scene is taking place, but also a little bit of a commentary on what is going on. So a little bit of the breaking down the wall and just a little bit of illumination of whatever is happening. So there's that aspect of it. And the costumes are being designed by Stacia Jameson, who has kept in mind this aspect of video game fantastical characters. And so I'm hoping that visually it will be really entertaining. And then the music on top of that will just make this a very special event.
Yeah, so I mean, it sounds like even if you've seen The Magic Flute 1,000 times, it might be worth it to check this one out.
Yes, this is very different.
All right, well, thank you all so much for coming in. Really appreciate you talking to me. And yeah, good luck with the show and everything else you've got coming up.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
That was my conversation with Mari Hahn, Griffin Lindsay, and Marilyn Camry. We were discussing the UA Opera Ensemble's upcoming production and modern take on Mozart's Magic Flute. Performances will be in the UAA Recital Hall on Saturday and Sunday, April 18th and 19th at 4 and 7:30 p.m. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
Thanks for joining us today for Hometown Alaska. And thanks to our guest, Callie Bennett. Ammon Swenson produces this show. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Sherry. Thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.